You're listening to Strictly Business Podcast with Lindsay Williams.
It's Wednesday, so it's time for Wayne on Wednesday with Wayne McCurry, Portfolio Manager at FNB Wealth and Investment in Johannesburg. And Wayne, it's relatively quiet. Well, it's not relatively quiet. It's very quiet on the JSE, which has been illustrated by the lack of volume on the local exchange and also lack of stock exchange and new service announcements. So we have to look overseas and we have to look at the United States consumer price inflation data. Now, this thing has come down. Last month's print was 4%. Okay, that has outperformed on the downside every other major developed world country. The UK is still messing around at 8.7%. But today, tell us about what happened in the United States, please.
Well, the inflation number came in, as you said, at 3%. It was below the expectations.
Goodness me.
The month-on-month increase was 0.2%, and last month was 0.1%. So if you annualize that, inflation's back in the target bands, more or less. And I don't think there's going to be a rate increase, and neither does the share market, because our share market is up strongly 2%, led by the mining shares up 3%. And there, Anglo Platts up 6, Sibanye up 5, Impala up 5, Northam up 6.5. So it's led by the shares that were walloped the most, which were the platinum shares. And virtually, so the Rand's trading at 18.25. Now, just a little bit of a, let's say background to the Rand. The Rand's been weakening since interest rates started going up overseas. So it's been weakening since halfway through 2021, where it was at 14 against the dollar, and it went to 80. Now that's, for want of a better word, a normal movement in an economic down cycle. In other words, a commodity down cycle. The Rand should weaken, and it did weaken, and that's quite normal. So the move from 14 to 18, to me, was absolutely normal. There was nothing strange about that. Then we had domestic issues that pushed it to call it 20. And that was Eskom and load shedding and the Lady R and selling ammunition to Russia and being part of BRICS and all of that. That was the spike. Then it came back quite strongly in June, back to 18. And then it went up again to 19. And now it's virtually back at 18 again. So in other words, in my view, the Rand is now reflecting the correct valuation based almost exclusively on global economic conditions and the commodity cycle. To me, 18, the Rand should be at 18, where we are now.
Okay, so you're happy with that.
As I've spoken about many, many times,
over
the next 2 years, I think we're going to get a commodity upcycle. And the Rand is probably going to 16.50 or 17 or somewhere in that region.
Really,
not
Wayne?
Now, not this year, I don't think. But on a two-year basis, we should look and anticipate some Rand strength.
And also that's got to do with the weakness of the US dollar. Because if the US dollar is
the same cycle,
it's part of the same thing. And so, I mean, you say today what most people are betting on here is that there's no more interest rate cuts, or rather raises, in the United States. So that means that the dollar is less attractive. And look at the euro-dollar exchange rate. It's 111, for goodness sake. 1.11.
Yeah.
It doesn't sound like a lot, but it hasn't been there a few months now, so it's good. And let's go back to that inflation number. It says here, US consumer price inflation fell to an annualized 3% in June. I mean, that's not down from 3.2%. It's down from 4%. It's a 25% move. It's a 25% move.
As we've been speaking about this for endless months, endless weeks and months now.
Yes.
Inflation, headline inflation, was always going to fall very sharply after June.
Yes.
Or May and June, because of base effects.
Right.
In other words, the peak of the copper price, the peak of food prices, the peak of oil prices, the peak of all commodities was in May last year. So now you're in June, now you're measuring off the very high base. So the headline number was always going to plummet purely on base effects. Now, I know a lot of people will say, you know, if you take out food and energy, inflation in America is still 4%.
4.8%, actually. Yeah.
But if you excluded the food and the energy last year, inflation wouldn't have gone to 10%.
Quite right.
You know, so you must, you know, you compare the right things with the right things. And you know, headline inflation is what counts. I actually don't like this concept of core inflation. Because headline inflation is what hits your pocket, because it's based on a basket of goods that people consume in the economy.
Yes.
You only exclude energy and food because they're more volatile to try and get an idea of what the underlying inflation trends are. But that's just, it's almost academic, because interest rates are set on headline inflation. The money you pay, the money that comes out your pocket, et cetera, is all set on headline inflation. So headline inflation is the only one that counts.
I know. Now, I don't understand.
I think headline inflation. Yeah, I think headline inflation will be back in the target range before the end of the year, both in South Africa and in America.
Yes, you're absolutely right.
It's going to plummet.
You're absolutely right, because it's like saying to a household, okay, your inflation rate is now X percent, and that's because you don't eat food and you don't drive a car and you don't heat your home. It's nonsense. It's not nonsense, because there's obviously an economic reason for doing this, a statistical reason for doing it. But what household doesn't eat food and use energy?
Consume energy.
It's silly. Yeah. Exactly. Listen to us moaning on. Anyway, it's been very good for the bond market.
I actually think, and I'll go back to what I spoke about, what we've spoken about now forever.
Mm.
I think inflation is going to surprise on the downside.
Ah.
I think it's going to fall quicker than what people anticipate. And I still think there are going to be rate cuts both here and in America before the end of the year.
You heard it here first with Wayne McCurry, who has been right on inflation
for months and months now.
Yes, you have. You've been absolutely right. And one of the reasons that I can back your theory up is because inflation in China, producer price inflation has fallen for nine months consecutive. It's negative. And CPI inflation is zero to slightly negative. How many countries do not import Chinese goods? Virtually none.
Exactly, yeah.
So they are importing deflation. And that is one of the reasons why, with obviously a lack of demand because of a little bit of a slowdown, that is why inflation is going to come down. But the China factor is terribly important to me, Wayne.
Yes, it is. Yeah, it is. And of course, now we must always look ahead to the next big trend. Okay.
All right.
And the next big trend will be falling inflation, falling interest rates. Surprisingly enough, it might sound outrageous, but you'll start to hear the word deflation coming into the system.
Mm.
You know, because it's quite likely you're going to get a negative month on month in the US in the not too distant future. You know, not 0.1 or 0.2, a negative number. Then people are going to start saying, oh, deflation, deflation, deflation. And you're going to, I don't think it'll go deflationary, by the way, but you're going to start hearing that word coming out. Yeah. And more economic slowdown numbers, and the federal banks, the banks worldwide, are going to cut rates. It's very normal. It's a normal cycle. You know, in fact, that's not quite correct. In America and Europe and the UK, it's actually quite abnormal because how high inflation spiked. I mean, they haven't seen inflation like that in 40 years, and that's been my primary reason as to why I say I think inflation is going to fall quicker than anticipated, because it rose quicker than anticipated, and inflation is not embedded in these economies. It's not. You know, inflation in South Africa is far more embedded than it is in America. Thank goodness it's not nearly as embedded as what it used to be in the 80s. You know, in the 80s, I wasn't in the investment markets in the 80s at all. But if people had said to you in the 80s, inflation is going to fall from 15% to 4%, you'd have been laughed at. It would have been absolutely inconceivable. But that's not the point. The point is, in America and the UK and Europe, et cetera, you know, 7%, 8%, 9%, 10% inflation is not normal. It's actually quite abnormal. And I think it's going to reverse out of the system very, very quickly. Now, a lot of people will argue and say, yes, but look at the wage inflation. That's still running at 4%. And yes, it is. But when you look at the wage numbers, the big inflationary input there is actually in the services industry as it sort of recovers and showing great growth post-COVID. But that's also a one-off. So in other words, it's the travel industry, it's the leisure industry, it's hotels and restaurants and all of that that are paying up to find people to work there because there's an unexpected return to normality post, you know, the big COVID slump. Now, that's also a one-off. So in other words, that wage inflation number will also moderate quite dramatically when the economy slows down because you've got the highest interest rates or the sharpest increase in interest rates there, I think, on record. Of course, the economy is going to slow down.
This is very interesting.
I think it's behaving very normally, quite frankly.
Well, I think it's actually, I disagree on that point because I think it's abnormal because normally an inflation cycle will be a long and protracted one, a structural rise, and it'll be part of a wave and then suddenly it'll come down after a few years. This has been a 2-year blip. I mean, I don't like to say that 2 years is just a blip, but it has been. I mean, the US inflation rate, 3%, has come down from 9%, for goodness sake. It was just a blip, and now the economy is normalizing.
The absolute high level was a blip, yes. Mm. And that was on the back of, you can say, a lot of COVID, but a lot of wars and also a lot of the mining companies and the oil producing countries didn't invest any capital. So you saw this huge spike in commodity prices. The spike in food prices wasn't abnormal. That happens on quite a regular basis, actually. But of course, all the supply chain disruptions and the chip shortage and all of the stuff related to COVID. So the extent of this cycle is abnormal. The fact that the cycle has happened wasn't abnormal. Just how high it went was abnormal.
Okay, well, let's hope that there's some sort of stability. I don't want it to go from 4 to 3, from 3 to 2 immediately. I want it to calm down a little bit, but I don't care what anybody says. A little bit of low inflation, not deflation, but a little bit of low inflation is terribly, terribly good for the stock market.
Now, let's talk about the markets. Hugely so.
Massively so. Now, let's talk about other things, Wayne. Let's talk about food. I haven't really got anything. I don't like to talk to you about vegetables because I know that having spoken to you last week and you said...
It's not big in my life, though.
I know. But you did say, which made me titter last week, you said, I think I remember once eating an apple, which tells me your relationship with fruit and vegetables. But anyway, I go to Spain quite regularly. I go to Barcelona regularly.
Spain's lovely.
It's lovely. But you go to a tapas bar, and one of the things that they have is something called a padrón pepper, which is like in between a green chili and a green pepper. It's not hot, but it's size-wise, it's got its stem on and everything, and it's lovely. And so what they do is they sort of not deep fry it, but fry it in very, very hot oil for 3 or 4 minutes and then cover it in salt. And it's one of your starters. And that's what I did today because I found I tell you what, at my little greengrocer just around the corner from where I live, they have these artichokes and exotic stuff that you wouldn't be interested in. But anyway, I bought a bag.
I like artichokes. I like artichokes. One I do like, yes.
Well, in that case, I shall think of you this evening when I'm eating my giant artichoke. But anyway, I bought a brown paper bag full of padrón peppers, and at lunchtime today, I heated up the oil till it was smoking. In fact, I had to open the back door so that the alarm wouldn't go off. And I put these padrón peppers in there for 3 or 4 minutes and turned them and tossed them, etc. Put them on some paper to get rid of the oil, put it in a bowl, and you put a lot of salt on them and you eat them because the stem thing is still on, and it was absolutely delicious. So artichokes tonight, padrón peppers for lunchtime. What is your food story, please? Have you got one?
Now, I've actually got a couple of food stories. Just you've inspired me with the peppers there.
Okay.
For my breakfast in the morning, I often make a thing called one pan.
What's that?
So you just take a pan.
Yes.
You just take a pan and put it on the oven.
Right.
Put it on the stove.
Yeah.
The little bit of butter in it, and then whatever you can find in the fridge.
Ah.
Just about, you throw in the one pan. So we've normally got ham, we've normally got chorizo, we've normally, well, we've always got cheese, eggs. But then, just to remind me, the other last week I found some red and green peppers in the fridge.
Okay.
And I threw that into my one pan.
Look at you.
And I found some onions, and I threw some onions into my one pan breakfast. And I grilled them, I fried them quite a bit until they were fresh, were quite crispy, with the chorizo. Then I added the ham and the eggs and the cheese later on, and just sort of like cooked the eggs essentially into a bit of a scrambled. And I must say that was really, really delicious.
You know, Wayne, I mean, I don't know how you're going to eat for the rest of the day, but sorry, I interrupted you. Go on before I go on to my story again. Off you go.
No, and then just you're talking about Spain.
Mm.
You know, for the South Africans who love their meat,
yeah,
their steaks and that.
Oof.
Spain is the best place I've had steaks overseas. They are comparable to South African steaks. You can go there and order a steak. You know, when you go to the UK and order a steak,
that's not a steak.
It's not a South African steak.
No.
It's not. And I've been to the US and I've ordered steak there and it's not. And don't even go to Germany or France and order a steak. It's not a steak. But in Spain, you can get a steak.
Yeah. They've got bulls there. They've got cattle there that run around, and well, I agree with you entirely. But Wayne,
their cuts are similar as well, and how they cook it is very similar to South Africa.
All right.
Okay. You know, I once went to a Michelin. The only time in my life I've been to a Michelin star restaurant in Londres, in London.
Yes.
And I wasn't paying clearly, but I asked the host, who was paying, what do you eat here? And he said, you have the bœuf, the beef.
The bœuf.
So I said, bring it on. I mean, the plate looked like an artwork.
Mm.
And I really enjoyed that. But the steak, a butcher shop here and Turn and Tender and significantly better, the actual meat.
One day, Wayne, I haven't done it, but one day you must go to Argentina because their life is based around steak.
I've never been there. Yeah.
Nor have I.
I've never been there, but there was an Argentinian restaurant in the Wedge here in Johannesburg,
yeah,
maybe 20 years ago, and their food was fantastic. And what was nice about this Argentinian restaurant was that they actually had the fire inside the restaurant,
yes,
with a glass screen around it. And then they cooked your steak on there. It took coals out of the fire. So it was like a proper braai place. Now, that was, I must say, that was delicious. Now, my daughter and her husband went on their honeymoon. They're quite adventurous. They started off in the south of America near, what's it, Tierra del Fuego or wherever, you know, the southern point of South America.
Yes.
And they toured for a good couple of months, all backpacking, all, what's that, Airbnb sort of stuff, for a month or two on their honeymoon, and they said the steak in Argentina was good.
Yeah, it's a ritual. I mean, there are some restaurants that you go to which doesn't serve anything but different cuts of meat, and you'll say, excuse me, my dear fellow, I'll have a rump steak and a salad with some, as you would call it, Wayne, chippies on the side. I'll say, what are you talking about?
With some chippies, yeah.
No, nothing.
Yeah.
All they have is meat. But anyway, what you were talking about earlier about putting all the leftovers in the pan,
in
England, you have a Christmas lunch, a giant turkey and ham and mashed and roast potatoes and three or four different vegetables and everything. And of course, the table is groaning with all this food and you can't eat it all. Even you wouldn't be able to eat it all.
It's leftovers,
Exactly.
Yeah.
So the next day, the leftovers, and the leftovers are called Bubble and Squeak. So what you do, what my mother, dear Doris...
I've heard of Bubble and Squeak.
And Squeak. You get all the stuff together. You chop up the leftover turkey meat and vegetables and everything, and the mash, or rather, you mash up the potatoes that are left, which were roast potatoes, and you fry it up in the pan, and it's called Bubble and Squeak. And you're talking essentially, a South African Wayne McCurry version of Bubble and Squeak.
Yeah.
That's what you had.
But now, talking about that, I can remember I went overseas with my parents in 1968 on one of the mail ships. We arrived in Southampton.
The Windsor Castle.
And the first thing my mom and dad did was go to a local fish and chip place, whatever, a local restaurant.
Yeah.
And they ordered two things. They ordered bubble and squeak, which you could get.
Goodness me.
And then they ordered cockles and mussels.
Gosh, from this, it was like an East End
place.
Eight-year-old,
for an 8 year old, the cockles and mussels weren't good.
No, I wouldn't.
Bubble and squeak was quite nice. The cockle and mussels were not good, but my parents, I mean, they loved it. But my last little quick food story was I was in Durban last night for a company function, and I stayed near the Umhlanga Ridge Mall. I don't know its exact name, but it's a big shopping mall on the ridge there.
Yes.
Because our company office is right there. So I wandered down to the shopping mall for my supper, and I found a branch of Mozambique there.
Ah, okay.
There's two here in Joburg that I go to quite regularly, and I thought, this is what I'm going to go there. Now, the world's biggest rugby fan and I went to the local Mozambique here about 2 or 3 weeks ago. And there you can buy 10, 20, 30, or 40 prawns. You know?
Yeah.
So I said, I'll have the 30.
Of course.
And the world's biggest rugby fan looked at me and said, no, 30 is too many. You normally have 12. Get 20. So I got 20. And when I went out to Mozambique last night, I chatted to the world's biggest rugby fan. And I said to her, I'm having prawns. And she said, are you having 30 prawns?
How many are you having? Yeah, of course, as a woman would, yeah.
I'm not allowed. I'm not allowed to have any because they've actually got a photograph of me hanging up in the Durban branch. They're saying this man cannot have more than 20 prawns. So I had to have 20.
And just tell me something, the prawns, because I try to buy prawns in the Netherlands and I say, okay, I say to the fishmonger, have you got prawns? And invariably frozen. And I say, well, where are they from? And they're from Bangladesh or somewhere. I want a proper Mozambique prawn.
Mozambican.
Yes, yeah. And I can't find them anywhere, and so I don't buy them anymore.
These were delicious. I had half of them done in the garlic sauce because they actually fry them in the sauce, and the other half done in peri-peri. And they had their bottle of peri-peri as well, which I must admit is very good, but it's not nearly as good as the Honey Rock. The Honey Rock has got the best peri-peri sauce I've ever had in my life.
All right.
I buy it by the liter. And also, it also goes into my one-pan breakfast, a bit of the Honey Rock peri-peri sauce there. But I must say, their prawns were delicious, and I had it with chippies, and it was fantastic. I'm not allowed to have 50 of them, but those are the rules, eh?
That's a very, very sad story. A man that is dominated by a woman, but, I mean, that's me being sexist.
Yeah, well, that's life, eh?
Well, apparently so, and certainly in McCurry household. Okay, Wayne, as always, I'm absolutely starving. I'm salivating here, which I will sort out quite soon. Wayne McCurry is a portfolio manager at FNB Wealth and Investment, and that was Wayne on Wednesday. The views and opinions expressed in these podcasts are those of Lindsay Williams and various contributors and do not reflect the policy, position, or opinion of any other agency, organization, employer, or company associated with strictlybusinesspodcast.com. Assumptions made on the analyses are not reflective of the position of any other entity other than the speaker or the author. And since we are critically thinking human beings, these views are always subject to change, revision, and rethinking at any time. Please do not hold us to them in perpetuity.